Mark Burton, registration number 30993, for Mr. Hernandez Fuentes, who is present in the court today. If it may please the court. Your Honor, I think what this case hinges on is whether the advice concerning the immigration consequences of the plea in this case amounted to ineffective assistance of counsel. And the critical issue for here was whether this plea would divest Mr. Fuentes of any relief in federal immigration court. And just to briefly recap the standard under Strickland v. Washington, is Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes' burden to show that counsel's performance was deficient and the defendant suffered prejudice. And prejudice has shown that the defendant would have otherwise rejected the plea, and that rejection would have been reasonable under Hill v. Lockhart.
Mr. Burton, yes. Unlike many cases in this area, here, Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes had immigration counsel.
That's correct.
So your position has to be that the immigration counsel gave correct advice and presumably gave correct advice to Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes, but his trial counsel somehow misinterpreted that advice and then gave him bad advice.
Actually, what happened was that Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes did not receive advice directly from his immigration counsel because this plea came up very quickly. But immigration counsel actually talked with his defense counsel and informed him that the plea in question would divest Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes of the relief they were seeking in immigration court, which was the only relief available to him.
And I assume then you're also going to take the position that the memorandum that was prepared by his trial counsel is a misrepresentation of the advice he gave to Mr. Hernandez.
But, Your Honor, he never, in the memorandum number one, he never stated that he would not be devoid of any relief in immigration court, which was what was crucial to Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes' evaluation of the plea offer.
And pardon me, counsel, sorry. But I'm not sure that's the case. Taking a look at the language of the memorandum, it says what the prosecutor offered. It says that, quote, this is as good as it's going to get. And I spoke with the immigration attorney, and she said that a false reporting conviction would qualify as a crime of moral turpitude. And the immigration attorney said even if defendant pled guilty to a petty offense, given his history, he would be denied the request for immunity for deportation. So client is caught between a rock and a hard place, and after speaking with him, he decided he wanted to go with the offer rather than risk a felony conviction. Doesn't that mean that Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes was told, sir, if you accept this plea, you are not going to have an immunity from deportation defense?
Well, I think what it says is that they were crimes of moral turpitude. And in the testimony and in the hearing, the trial counsel testified that he indeed told Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes that he had a relief available to him.
It's all No. Isn't one way to read that is he simply said you may get deported and you may not?
Correct. Which means that, but the advice from his immigration attorney was that he would be deported, that there was no relief available to him under the plea offer.
Well, isn't that decision ultimately up to the immigration court and not up to the criminal court?
Yes, but...
And then if I may interrupt you one last time. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes' testimony, and I read it recently, said that he wasn't told anything about it potentially going bad with him for immigration, and that his lawyer told him nothing about the consequences of that. And so this appears to contradict, the record appears to contradict the position that your client took in his testimony at the hearing, doesn't it?
The testimony
of your client at the hearing. Doesn't all this information seem to go contrary to that?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Contrary to what?
Doesn't your client's testimony seem to go contrary to the state of the record?
No, because it was actually supported by the immigration attorney who talked to Mr. Fuentes shortly after he took the plea and stated that he was shocked when he learned that he wouldn't be able to qualify for cancellation of removal. And indeed, Mr. Clemens, on several occasions, stated to the court in the 35C and also at the plea and sentencing that he would, that the, it was an open question of whether he would be deported or not, but inferring that he still had relief available to him. But the testimony unrebutted from the immigration expert was that other than this case, that Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes qualified for relief for under 10-year cancellation removal. Number one, because he'd been here over 10 years. Second of all, because he had American family ties. And third of all, that he qualified because of good moral character. And the testimony was that if he were to plead to this case, that he would not qualify anymore. He would have no relief available to him, which means that he would be deported.
Mr. Burton, yes. But doesn't this ultimately come down to credibility? And why should this court not defer to the trial court's credibility determination? It seems to me that the trial court decided that his counsel, you know, was more credible, and was, and that credibility was further supported by his own memorandum than that predated the plea agreement.
Right, a memorandum that no one had seen up until the day of the hearing. But however, it's at the sentencing. I mean, which statement of the trial counsel would believe at sentencing? He stated after he gets to immigration court, this is in August 31st of 2009, it's going to be one way or the other. And he went on to say he has no intent on leaving, and he's going to do everything that he can to assert his rights in immigration court. Well, if there's no relief available, there's no right to assert.
Mr. Burton, excuse me, but just to follow up on a comment you made, you indicated that nobody had seen this memorandum until the day of the hearing.
Yes.
By that, do you mean to suggest that it's not accurate?
I think it's certainly questionable, because I had it's in the record. I had asked for his file, and it was not included in his file prior to the hearing.
But as I understand the state of the record, sir, it hasn't been impeached.
No, it hasn't.
Okay.
However, it was impeached by his own testimony, because he stated on page 60 through 62 of the 35C hearing that he believed that Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes actually qualified for relief, which is actually is contradicts at least the spirit of the memorandum. And he said it on several occasions. He said on page 55, there's still relief available. That he may not be deported on page 60, that he was entitled to relief. Then he believed that was true based on his marriage to a U.S. citizen on page 62. And he also stated on page 64, I don't know whether he would be deported or not. It could go one way or the other. Just
there's
what he said to the trial court.
There never was any question here, as I understand, again, the record,
right,
that here's a defendant with two lawyers, one of which is an immigration lawyer, one of which is not an immigration lawyer.
Right.
And as I understand, again, the record, Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes was fully aware that one was an immigration lawyer and one was not.
Correct.
All right.
And his testimony was that he felt that they were cooperating, that he would get the he got the information from Mr. Klein, from his immigration attorney. And the testimony was also that this thing came up very suddenly, and that he didn't have time to talk to his immigration attorney before he pled.
Pardon me, Mr. Burton. I want to understand what relief you think Mr. Hernandez-Fuentes would be entitled to. Let's assume for the purpose of argument, I mean, he's saying, well, if I'd known this, I wouldn't have pled. But are you saying that he would have pled to a felony instead?
No.
And or he would have gone to trial, and what likelihood was it that he would have gotten convicted? Obviously, there are a lot of factors here in play about whether he really would have not accepted this plea disposition. I mean, if he had gotten convicted of the felony, he may have done time.
Well, as in Padilla, they conducted a Padilla, they actually spoke about that, and they said that often the immigration consequences are much more important to the defendant than any possible criminal consequence. And
and that include accepting the risk that he could go to prison.
Yes, and as we all know, trial lawyers, that when people actually do go to trial, people's positions change. Things happen. He was willing to risk going to trial, and he stated that on the record in his hearing, rather than, because he said he would be separated from his son forever. And there's no greater penalty that he could have faced than being separated from his son. And he was willing to face that risk. And I think under Pozo and then under Padilla, I think we have shown that there was the ineffective assistance of counsel, that under both cases, criminal defense attorneys have some sort of obligation when they're aware that their client is not an American citizen to make some inquiry into immigration law. Now the question is how much, but I don't think that we need to go there in this case, because he was provided with expert advice in this matter and did not accurately relay that to Mr. Fuentes, which he testified to on the record when he said that. That he believed that he still had relief available. And I would, if I may, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for a rebuttal.
All right, sir, you have 3 minutes and 42 seconds.
May I please the court, Paul Cameron for the people in this case. The defendant still had a crummy set of choices. He was caught using somebody else's social security number. He faced prison on one hand, followed by deportation. On the other hand, he was offered a good plea, or a plea offer to a couple of misdemeanor counts, which could affect his immigration status. According to the file to the memo, the defendant chose the non-prison alternative that affected his immigration choices.
Mr. Caller, but isn't it true that the misdemeanor counts didn't merely have the potential to affect, but actually did affect his immigration relief, the availability of immigration relief?
If you look at the U.S. Supreme Court case, it says the immigration consequences have to be related, whether succinct, clear, and explicit. And clearly, the federal immigration statutes concerning crimes involving moral turpitude are clear. I think the rub with a lot of immigration law, which is why I feel I tread carefully in speaking about it, is what crimes actually involve crimes involving moral turpitude. There's nothing clear in the statute that I could find that said
but
that.
The immigration expert opined that it didn't matter whether he pled guilty to, you know, using social security cards or, you know, an official document.
As a practical matter of how immigration judges do it, but I couldn't find anything in the statute, which is the Padilla standard. Plea counsel talked with immigration counsel. He relayed the information. He testified. He relayed that bad series of choices to the defendant. The defendant made a hard choice, and that's supported by the memo to the file. And I know the defendant testified to the contrary, but the trial court was charged with making a credibility determination on this, where no two things could be true at the same time. And I think the trial court made its findings, said that the memo to the file was convincing to it that, in fact, the immigration consequences, that this was a crime involving moral turpitude, were relayed to the defendant. And the defendant said, well, he made the choice of the bad consequence as opposed to the really bad consequence of facing prison time, as opposed to, I think he got a year of unsupervised probation in this case. So it was a hard situation, and I realize it's very hard on the defendant, but his other choices were worse. And if the trial court were to have set aside his plea in this case, it would have had to have reinstated the original charges, and the original charges would go forward against the defendant, and he would be back to facing felony prison time for his acts in this case. Bad choices, but the trial, this case comes down to a credibility determination, and the record supports that determination, and we therefore ask that the order be affirmed. If the court has any further questions, I could try and address them. Thank you, Your Honors. Thank you. First of all, about the danger of going to trial, this was a Class 5 felony. Didn't involve mandatory prison. Wasn't a crime of violence. Actually, nobody's property. There was even any loss to any victim. So the risks were not as grave as the government would like to make out.
Pardon me, counsel. If he got convicted of this felony, mm-hmm. not only, I mean, perhaps he goes to prison, perhaps not, but mm-hmm. he gets deported too.
Yes.
Right? So, regardless of conviction, he gets deported.
That's my understanding from the record. That's my personal understanding. I believe that was what was said in the record.
Thank you.
And I'm assuming that he was advised properly that the trial court didn't have to accept the plea arrangement.
Correct. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with the advisement in the court. I think it was the advisement from his attorney that was the problem.
So he understood that he faced a potential rejection of misdemeanor.
Correct.
And had to stand trial for a felony.
Correct. And he testified that he's willing to do that. Now, as far as the law on crime of moral turpitude, the immigration expert actually forwarded the immigration judge's bench book and a case to the trial counsel, explaining why those two charges were crimes involving moral turpitude. So I don't think there's any gray area that he was told specifically that they were crimes involving moral turpitude. Now, as far as the credibility determination, the court is to give great deference to the record, but however, that doesn't mean that the record is the court's findings are immune from review. And here we have on August 31st, 2009, telling the court. As an officer of the court, that it could go one way or the other. And on the date, I'm sorry, I don't have it here in front of me, on the date of the hearing, not only did he said it over and over that he believed that Mr. Hernandez Fuentes was entitled to immigration relief. So if he believed that, it stands to reason that that's the message that Mr. Hernandez Fuentes had. He told the court that. He told the court that on two different occasions, at the competency hearing and sentencing, and also at the 35C hearing. So what we have is at best ambiguous message that went to Mr. Hernandez Fuentes. He was there in court. He heard. His attorney tell the court that it could go one way or the other, and that he plans to stay here and assert his rights in immigration court. Now, that's not a message to someone that they don't have any relief available in the immigration court, which is what the expert gave the trial attorney. So it's our contention that he received ineffective assistance of counsel, that he did not receive accurate advice on his immigration issue, on the matter that was most crucial to him, staying in the country and being with his son. He's shown prejudice, I mean, as I said, that he would stand, he would willing to risk to go to trial, we would ask the court to overturn the finding of the trial court and remand it for vacation of the plea. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Thank you, Mr. Kohler, for your arguments. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.